Forbidden Panel welcomes you to Panelcast, Forbidden Panel's weekly podcast featuring movie and comic news and reviews. And now, your hosts, AJ and Brian.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 63 of the Panelcast. This is Brian.
And this is AJ. It's been over a month, man. Over a month since our last recording.
I know.
We've got a lot of stuff to talk about, so this is going to be a pretty long episode. So just relax, people, and enjoy the sounds that we're about to bring you to your ears as we molest them. We got a lot of stuff to talk about, so we'll go ahead and take a quick break and get to it when we come back.
Guys, this is Daniel Corey. I'm the founder of Danger Cat Creative Studio, and I want to tell you real quick about my upcoming comic, Moriarty, The Dark Chamber. It's about Professor Moriarty, the arch nemesis of Sherlock Holmes. I'm working with artist Anthony Diachidua on it, letterer Dave Lampier. Please go to DangerCat.com and check it out. That's DangerCat.com. And please go over to Kickstarter.com. We're running a campaign right now to try to raise funds for the production of the book. So, shoot us an email, let us know how you like it, and we'll see you on the web.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. All right, what we're going to do first is we're going to talk a little bit about why we've been missing for about a month. There's been a lot of things going on, and I'm sure anybody that's been following Forbidden Panel on the website probably has seen at least some of it. I think one of the main reasons, probably just because I was having some technical difficulties, the headset that I used to record crapped out on me, and unfortunately, being broke motherfucker that I am, took a while before I could finally get another one.
What? You mean the glamorous life of comic book creators is a lie?
Yes. Yes, it is all a lie.
Yeah, see, I knew, like, I told everybody that was asking, when is the next panel cast coming out? And I'm like, well, it's all Brian's fault.
It is. It was all my fault.
Stupid Brian. But honestly, it's not all. Brian can't take all the blame. Yes. Oh, look, they're coming after you, Brian. Awesome.
Yep. That's what happens when you live right next to a fire station.
Wow, we'll see. That's what you get for cheap rent. No quiet. No silence. But anyway, Brian can't take all the blame. I had strep throat and tonsillitis that knocked me out for about 2 weeks there, so I couldn't really speak, much less do the podcast. As evidenced by, I managed to put out a new episode of AJ's Side Panel while we were waiting, so that worked out good. And then Brian also put out a new Geek Girl, so that was pretty cool.
It wasn't entirely, non-productive.
Right. Plus, we had the ZKS pinup contest going on. We were posting news throughout the whole time. So, we may not have been able to hear our wonderful and lovely sexy voices, but we were making our presence known that we were still around. And we apologize for that. We hopefully won't be doing something, won't have that big of a gap in future times.
Yeah, well, hopefully this headset will serve me much better than the last one.
It better. Otherwise, I'm finding a whole new co-host because I just don't like you anymore.
What are you going to do about it?
Speaking of which, Geek Girls, talk to us about it.
Yeah, managed to get another Geek Girls episode done. It was one of the more traditional style Geek Girl episodes. It was just a one-on-one interview. And it took a little bit of planning, but I finally was able to get it done, and so I think it turned out pretty well. I'm still working on trying to get my group together for the new Geek Girls episodes, so that should hopefully come together soon now that I've got a headset and I can actually get together with everybody on Skype and talk about, what our plans are going to be for it.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to it. I liked the last episode. Ashley seemed like a good interviewee.
Yeah. Yeah. She's pretty entertaining. And she was pretty tired at that point because it was kind of late in the evening when we finally were able to record it. So, and plus, that's right around the time that my headset was having the worst of its technical problems. So we ended up having to try to re-record things a lot, and I kept having to stop the recording and restart it, and there was a lot of issues there. I ended up having to edit a lot of just really horribly garbled stuff out of it.
But apparently she was patient enough to allow that to happen and work with you, so that's pretty awesome all in itself.
Yeah, Ashley's a great girl, so I was glad that she was able to take the time and sit down and talk to me.
Well, good deal. So, looking forward to more of that, and again, we apologize for the lapse in time that we had between episodes, and we'll try to make it not happen again.
Yeah, well, I think maybe we should go ahead and take a quick break and then come back in with some news.
Awesome. Be right back, guys.
Hey, how's it going? This is Derek from Pulp Fiction and Long Beach, the world's biggest selection of graphic novels and comic books. Check out our website at www.cheapgraphicnovels.com, and you get all your graphic novels at 40% off cover price. How much?
45% off.
Even better than 40%. And we can ship it to you anywhere in the United States. Again, check out www.cheapgraphicnovels.com, or if you're in Long Beach, California, check us out at Pulp Fiction.
1742 Clark Avenue, Long Beach, California.
We got manga, we got anime, we got back issue comics, current comics. We'll put you on the pull list, give you a good discount. Graphic novels, figures, toys, the whole shebang. Check us out, because we rock. Pulp Fiction and CheapGraphicNovels.com. Booyah.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Panelcast. So we're going to get back to our normal format of bringing you some news stories that we've been dying to talk about since they happened in the past month. Brian, why don't you go first?
Okay. Well, the first one I was going to talk about was an update on the Spider-Man musical that we had mentioned in the last episode that was supposed to be opening up in December. It finally got a reveal for some of the costumes and characters of the musical, and wow, I absolutely am not going to see this.
Are you not going to see it because it's a musical, or are you not going to see it just because of the costuming?
Well, it already had points against it for being a musical, but after seeing the costumes and the character designs, I don't want anything to do with this.
You do understand that it's on stage and live, so it's not like they can put a whole bunch of production value into special effects or tight Lycra outfits. Like,
well, no, I understand
stuff.
That. I mean,
have you seen the costumes for the Lion King? I mean, it's just people wearing a big foam mask around them with their face showing.
But the, you know? Okay, the, granted, I haven't actually seen the Lion King on stage either, but the costume design that they did, for one, it fit in with the animation style of the cartoon, and, you know, it was creative the way that they did it. These are just, like, 80s bad.
They're Well, it is done by Bono, you know. And he was popular in the 80s.
Yeah, well, I'm blaming him, even though he's probably just, you know, doing the music. But, yeah, I've seen so far, there might be more out there, but they've revealed what the design for the Green Goblin is going to be, and I don't know. He looks like some sort of, like, road warrior leprechaun. I don't know how to leprechaun. Describe it. Like, he has this little ridiculous top knot and little green spikes all over the place, and it just, I don't know, it kind of looks like the Jolly Green Giant had sex with a stapler.
You know, you gotta post pictures when we post this up, right?
yeah we'll put the pictures up there. But the thing is the style of the Green Goblin's costume is nothing compared to this new character that they're introducing for the storyline. First of all, the character's name is Swiss Miss. So,
what's wrong with Swiss Miss?
Okay, well, you would think, like, Swiss Miss, maybe she's like some sort of evil Dutch girl or something, you know, or Swiss girl. Why did I say Dutch? But no. No, she's apparently made out of Swiss Army knives. And, yeah, this character, it looks like a combination of Grace Jones and something I can't even describe it. It's all silver and frills and spikes sticking out all over the place, and there's like 3 corkscrews on her head.
Corkscrews?
Yeah, there's 3 corkscrews on her head. Like, God, there's nothing about the pictures that I've seen that make me want to see this at all.
It's okay, Brian. It's okay.
So, I mean, if you want to, I don't know. I'm not going to make any more comments on it because I really don't know where to go on it. It looks awful is all I can say.
Like I said, man, just post pictures of it when we do this so we can all see and share in your horror.
Yeah, well, I'll post the pictures up there so everybody can see what I'm talking about. So what do you got?
We got a lot of, in the vein of comic book properties being turned into multimedia properties, comes the next story, which is getting kind of old, really, the fact that this is happening. But at the same time, as an indie comic creator myself, if it happens to ZKS, I'm not going to argue.
Right.
The comic book Lock and Key, which is one of my favorite comic books that's out right now, written by Joe Hill, has landed a deal at Fox. The network has made a series commitment to the project, which is produced by DreamWorks TV and KO Paper Productions, through the latter's deal with 20th Century Fox TV. It's going to have Star Trek producers Alex Kurtzman and Roberto Orci on board to executive produce, along with Heather Caden, Josh Friedman, Justin Falvey, Daryl Frank, and Ted Adams. The story of Lock and Key is pretty cool. It's basically this family is subject to watching their father being killed, father, husband being killed, and having to move back to his hometown to try and get their life back together again and try and move on from the tragedy. And while they're there, they find some keys that unlock some really crazy doorways. That's the best way I can put it without giving too much away. It debuted in 2008, and it's an awesome comic book. It's currently on its 4th volume. They're real short, too, like 6 issues. I'm excited to see this come out to fruition. Unfortunately, it's one of those things like, we discussed before, how are they going to make a Preacher, the Boys, we're talking about the Boys, right. How they're going to convert the Boys into a show on anything other than like HBO, because it's so violent and so gory and so sexually filled. Well, Lock and Key is the same way in that the language that's used and the images that are shown, it's not for kids. It's not going to fit on anything short of FX or AMC, But
and who's supposed to be picking it up? Fox. It's Fox, right?
Fox. So Fox got it, and maybe they'll do a good job. Maybe it'll be cool. But I don't know. I'm not holding my breath on this one. We'll see what happens when it shows up on Fox.
Well, it's possible that they could maybe do it through FX instead. So don't they own that station as well?
I believe they do. But Friedman, who had worked on Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles, is working on this. And that was one of my favorite TV shows. I hated that it got canceled. And also, if you want to see an example of like Kurtzman and Orci's work, they're launching the Hawaii Five-0 TV series reimaging coming out this fall on CBS. So who knows?
I thought I just dreamed that.
Plus, they work on Fringe. So.
Well, I like Fringe, so.
Yeah,
that's at least good points for it.
There's some hope for it. It'll just depend on the channel that it's on, honestly, I think, at this point. So, I don't know. But congratulations to Joe Hill for having his stuff adapted into a TV series. I just want to, I'll just wait for it to come out. We'll see what happens. I'll wait till the trailers come out. Brian?
Let's see. Got a... The next story here that was actually something I had wanted to talk about a while ago, but unfortunately, due to our issues, we weren't able to. This is a press release that came out last month from the American Psychological Association that was – it kind of piqued my interest just because of the topic, which was that superheroes are sending the wrong image to boys, according to this researcher. And – reading through the press release, it was kind of difficult for me to really kind of agree with what they were saying, because they don't really give a whole lot of details as to what the nature of their research was. They mentioned that it seems like really all they did was they did a survey of about 674 children between the ages of 4 to 18. They interviewed them in malls and stuff like that. And so didn't seem like there was any real sort of rigorous scientific controls in this study. It just, like, they were just kind of walked around and interviewed people and then concluded that superheroes are bad for children because of the messages that are portrayed. And the interesting thing is that the woman who ran the studies, Sharon Lamb from UMass Boston, is at one point mentions that it's today's superheroes that they're too much like action heroes, with violence and aggressive and, you know, having flashy costumes and exploiting women, and saying that, you know, superheroes of the superhero comics of the past were much better for kids. And in a way, I guess I can kind of agree with that sentiment, but it seems like they're sort of missing the point in that the comic books are growing up because the main readers of comic books are growing up.
That's a stupid statement, though, when you think about it. Of course, comic books back in the day affected children in a different manner, because back in the day, life wasn't the same that it is now. You know? So, you know, of course, the 60s Batman was, you know, more friendlier to children and stuff back then. But when you look at it now, you realize how gay he was. And I don't mean that, like, in a derogatory term. I mean, he looked homosexual. Like, you know what I mean? His actions and everything that happened with him. So, of course, like, the comics back then affect the kids differently back then, because the kids back then were different kids, you know? So now you have...
Well, yeah, I think there's a lot of factors involved here, and it seems like she's just sort of simplifying everything. It almost seems more like she's got an axe to grind against comic books, and unfortunately, the press release didn't have a lot of the actual information that they had, and I've been trying to find out the actual data on the research that they did, and I haven't been able to come across it yet. I may have to try to email them or something to find out. But it seems more like it's a case of confusing correlation with causation. You know, that they've noticed some trends between things like depression in adolescence and the sales of comic books, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the two are connected. And there's no mention in here at all of all of the hundreds and hundreds of comics that are geared specifically for children without all of the aggressive stuff in there. You know, there's so many different factors that aren't being touched upon in this study.
Yeah, and you got to look at it too. Like, I mean, comic books are pretty much, Harry Potter, I hate to say this, but Harry Potter pretty much nails how things are. The way Harry Potter started off was when he was a kid, and the people that were reading were the same age. And now those people that have read Harry Potter growing up have grown up with him. So they're able to adapt their style. Or, you know, they watch this child grow to a man, and while they're doing the same thing. Now it's the same with comic books. All of us that grew up in the 70s that were reading comic books then, well, the characters have evolved, and so are we. You know?
Right.
So the comparison she's making is retarded. I always find that the women that complain about being exploited.
I don't think it necessarily has anything to do with their being female.
Well, I don't think so either. What I'm saying, though, is that she brought up the fact that women are being exploited. And I always find that the people that complain about women being exploited are just pissed off because they're too ugly to be exploited themselves.
Well, I can't make any comments on that about this particular woman. It's mostly I just have an issue with the way that the press release is reporting that the research was done, and that they just surveyed kids, you know, in malls and stuff like that, and talked to sales clerks. So there wasn't any sort of scientific control for this. I don't see how they can have any sort of basis for making the claims that they are making. There's no controls.
Right.
So it kind of calls that into question for me, and it'll be interesting to see, but I don't think this particular study will have any real impact on anything. I mean, you know, you can go out there and find a research study to prove anything you want, really.
Right.
You know, and ultimately, you have to kind of look at the way that the research was done. And in this case, I don't think that it was really... It was too one-sided. They were looking for something specific, and that's what they found.
Well, here's the problem. Like, when you go out to do a study, nobody does a study to cover a wide spectrum. Nobody goes out to do a study to be proven wrong.
Well, yes and no. It depends. I think in particular with the more soft sciences like psychology, it seems like they usually have more of a specific outcome in mind when they start doing their studies. And granted, psychological scientific studies are much harder to perform just because of the very nature of psychology. But it seems too often that they don't really try to look at all of the data. They look at the data that corresponds to what they're looking for, basically.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. Nobody goes out to be proven wrong. They go out to find stuff that'll prove them right. So when they find out information that may counteract or counter, you know, work against what they're trying to prove, they ignore it and focus on what helps their hypothesis, you know?
Right.
So
yeah, ultimately, I don't think that this is really going to have a huge impact, you know?
Right. It's retarded. But anyway.
So what about you? What do you got?
My last bit of story for this segment, anyway, is I don't know how to feel about this. Once again, it's talking about we're going to be talking about how a comic book is being adapted into a multimedia form in a TV show. And
right.
So again, I don't know how I feel about this. I think that anyway, The Sandman, which many of us are all familiar with from creator Neil Gaiman. Is being considered, Warner Brothers TV is in the midst of acquiring the television rights from the sister company DC Entertainment and is in talk with several writer-producers about adapting the 1990s comic. At the top of the list is Eric Kripke, creator of CW's horror-tinged Supernatural. This book is finally being looking at to be adapted into a TV series. And once again, I feel that it will not work on the CW or any other mainstream TV, unless it's FX, AMC, you know, before going into like HBO and stuff. HBO tried to bring it over to them, but they just couldn't reach an agreement. You know, it was hard for them to get Gaiman to be on board with it, and Gaiman was like, yeah, no, so they couldn't go forward with it. But now Warner Brothers TV is trying to do it, and they will probably have a better opportunity to do so because, again, they own DC Comics. So, you know, it's basically going, yeah, I'll take that one. You know what
right.
I mean? Unfortunately, if it does go on the CW, I'm afraid of it turning into, like, another teeny boppy sensation, you know, another Vampire Diaries or something like that, you know? I don't know. I am... You know what? No, I can't even say that, honestly. I am not excited to see The Sandman on TV. I'm just not happy to see it. Because there's just too many adult themes in that comic book. Once again, touching base with what you brought up earlier, there's too many adult themes in this comic book to translate properly into a TV show. At least nothing on, like, ABC or CW, you know what I mean? CBS or NBC. So
how a lot of that material can cross over just... In the way that it was written, it seems like there would be a lot left out if they made it into a TV show.
Yeah, exactly. And so I just don't see how... I mean, one of my favorite issues of The Sandman is the serial killer convention. How are they going to do that? There's no way they're going to betray a convention full of serial killers, not just human, but monsters and all that, in this atmosphere. It's going to... Yeah, it's going to turn into like some ghostly gay Quantum Leap. Like, it's just not going to work. You know, and it's sad because I really love The Sandman, but yeah, I'm just afraid for it to happen. What do you think?
Sometimes all you can do is just cross your fingers and hope it works out.
I can't even do that. Like, honestly, it's just, I don't know. I don't know what to say, but to read more about any of the stories that we've talked about today, head over to ForbiddenPanel.com and check out the stories yourselves. But Brian, if that's all you got for this segment, let's go ahead and take a break, and we'll come right back.
Greetings, Forbidden Panelites. This is Benjamin Gleibert, Director of Publishing for Symantec, San Diego's premium comic book publisher and home of Mythoi and the webcomic The Undergrounds. Check us out online at Symantec.com. That's Symantec.com. For now, enjoy your geeky gurus, AJ and Brian. Symantec Publishing. Find the meaning in print.
Hey everybody, welcome back. All right, got a few more stories here for you. Let's see, do you want to start off or should I?
I'll take it, if you don't mind. Once again, going right back to the whole comic book film, comic books being adapted into a medium. It looks like Preacher has finally picked up a new director. And I don't know who it is because I haven't read the article yet. Yeah. Anyway, so like it's been picked up again, and the director is getting on there. It may be Joe Carnahan who did the A-Team. He'd like a shot of it, but we'll have to see what happens. Preacher is one of those things where we've talked about it before. It's such a big, iconic comic book that if they do anything that isn't following it verbatim, it's just going to be destroying our childhood or what we've loved about it. So
I would hope that you hadn't read that in your childhood.
Shut up. Anyway, that explains so much about what's wrong with me now. It's picked up a new director. It looks like it has some steam into being made into a movie, if not a TV show. And they can't do this as a movie. It would have to be like Harry Potter. It'd have to be like something like that, where it gets a decent 7-8 film thing going on. But I don't see that happening.
Yeah, not at all.
No, again,
I really, if anything, I would see it as a TV show.
Yeah, it's got to be HBO Starz, Showtime, one of those shows that goes on where they're not going to hold no holds barred account into what these comics are about. And you know, the more we get into these stories, Brian, the more I'm thinking that maybe that research was right, because the comic books that we're reading are pretty fucked up, and probably shouldn't be in the hands of children. You know, like we're talking Lock and Key, Preacher, Sandman, stuff like that. If that's what
right, but those comics aren't geared for children. Those are
true.
And if they're designed for adults.
But if those are the comics that they were researching about into this, then I can understand where their problems might be. But again, it's in the parents' hands to determine whether or not the children are reading these. I have a 15-year-old son who I wouldn't let anywhere near this comic book, much less my own. You know,
right.
So if these parents are letting these kids read these comics, well, then they deserve what they get at that point. Especially in Preacher. Preacher is a very adult comic book. It's a very controversial comic book on top of that, with a whole bunch of religious groups that would be seriously offended by this comic book. So I don't see how it's going to be a movie without dredging up a lot of drama for it. So I don't know. We'll see what happens, but it would make a stupid fucking movie. I mean, it's 99 issues long. There's no way they're going to compress all that into like a 2-hour, even a 3-hour movie.
Right.
I mean, give it to Peter Jackson, let him Lord of the Rings it or something like that. But still, it's not, I don't know, I just don't see it happening. It just doesn't make sense for it to happen. And again, because it's such an iconic comic book, if they do anything to screw it up, then they're just shooting themselves in the foot at that point.
So. Yeah, I think I definitely agree with that. And going on the same lines there, Dark Tower is getting picked up, and this has been kind of bandied about for years. But it seems like it's getting steam now. Universal Pictures and NBC Universal Television Entertainment apparently have closed a deal to turn the series not only into a film trilogy, but also a TV series. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, see, I don't see how that's going to work. Like, a trilogy and then a TV series? It just, you know, I don't know. I mean, they tried it with Blade, and they failed. So,
yeah, I'm kind of curious, because there's not a whole lot of information about what the actual plans are. I'm wondering, are they going to do a trilogy of the first three books and then do a TV series to follow up the rest of the story? Because honestly, the Dark Tower series is pretty weighty. Each of those books, I mean, they got progressively larger and larger as they went on. I mean, the last five books were each at least 400 to 500 pages.
Right. I mean, and on top of that, like, Stephen King is in the last book. So how are they going to do that? Like, of course Stephen King wants it made. He's like, finally, I get to be in a movie. Not that he's not in every single freaking movie that's ever done by his books, but I mean, you know, he gets to be a main character in a movie finally, but...
He even directed one of his own movies.
Yeah, and that turned to crap.
Yeah, well, even he admits that.
So I just don't see it, dude. Unless they made a trilogy out of the first book, and then, because I can see that, because it's a hefty book, that first one. And then TV series the rest.
Well, the first one, The Gunslinger, is probably the shortest out of all the Dark Tower books that came out.
But it's a lot to take in. Like, it'd be a good intro into the series is to make a movie. Like, kind of like they did with Battlestar Galactica, where they made that miniseries first, and then, you know, had five seasons afterwards. So if they did that, maybe. But that's a lot of stuff to take in, man. That's, I mean, a lot of stuff.
Yeah. My main concern with this really is just the fact that film adaptations of Stephen King's works often
fail.
Are not? Yeah, they fail. They just are not done well. Like, there's a few that I've seen that I was able to enjoy. I mean, the It TV series, miniseries that they did was okay. Certainly, I think having what's his name as Pennywise the Clown was probably
Tim Curry.
A fantastic choice. Tim Curry, yeah. They cut a lot of the rest of this stuff out of that book, though. But a lot of the movies, they're really not good at all. I mean, aside from the Frank Darabont adaptations.
And, of course, he's busy doing our favorite adaptation right now, so he's not going to be able to do it.
Right. That's my main concern. And then with the Dark Tower especially, you know, when it comes to Stephen King fans, there's either the people that are his Dark Tower fans or the people that are his horror fans.
Right.
And I happen to be one of the former. You know, I like all of his books, and I have everything except for one or two books. But I can't see how they could possibly adapt the Dark Tower without horribly pissing me off.
So again, this entire episode of Panelcast, episode number 63, is how is Hollywood going to piss us off?
Right.
That's basically the theme of it right now, because you can't do anything right. That's what we're saying here. I mean, granted, Ron Howard, he's a great director.
Like, he is.
You know, he's done a lot of great stuff. Some people don't like him, but that's fine. You can't argue with the fact that he busts his ass on the movies, and his movies are good. You know, so there's chance and hope in that. But I don't know. I don't see Ron Howard stick around for the whole trilogy and the TV series. You know, that's basically the rest of Ron Howard's life.
Right. So you hear me, Opie Cunningham?
Right.
Better not fuck this up.
Right. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, who knows? It could be the best thing ever. You never know. But what I'm worried about is for Stephen King fans, you guys know, if you have any intelligence or any know-how, you know that the Dark Tower just doesn't stop with this series.
Right. Okay? It expands out into all of Stephen King's other works.
It goes, I mean, we're talking The Talisman, we're talking The Black House, we're talking The Stand, even It. Everything that Stephen King has done revolves around the Dark Tower. The Dark Tower is his freeway, and all the rest of his books are the houses and businesses that surround the freeway. I mean, they all deal with it and intertwine with it one way or another. So how is that going to affect it? I mean, are we going to see another Hearts in Atlantis? Are we going to get explanations on that, you know?
Yeah, I was really disappointed when they stripped all the Dark Tower stuff out of Hearts in Atlantis.
That broke my heart. I mean, that's who Hardigan was. He was a seer for the Red King, the Crimson King, you know, so the Dark Man. So are they going to touch base on that? Are they going to mention that Randall Flagg is... ties in with the Dark Tower at all, you know? And the Randall Flagg, I mean, dude, come on. Randall Flagg was in It. He was in Eyes of the Dragon. He was all over the place.
He
was in The Stand.
Yeah.
He's all over the place in the Stephen King universe, so how are they going to touch base on that? Like, I don't know what they're going to do, because it's such an expansive universe that Stephen King has created. That's like saying, you know what, we're going to make a Marvel movie and ignore everything else. You know what I mean? It's like...
Yeah. I cannot picture this coming out well at all.
Yeah, but neither can I. But, well, I mean, who knows? We could be, like, completely mistaken. It could be the best thing we've ever seen in our lives.
True. I was skeptical about Lord of the Rings when I first heard they were making a film trilogy out of that. And then, you know, I ate my words later.
Right. But then again, it could be like Lord of the Rings, where, like, we have to wait 5 years before we get the full uncut version of everything. And even then, we're sitting in front of the damn TV for 12 hours before and we feel like we've walked the entire journey with fucking Bilbo Baggins. Like,
I'll be willing to wait as long as I have to if they can do it well.
And at the same time, we're comparing two stories that are pretty much exactly the same. I mean, The Dark Tower is about a man's journey to a dark place. You know,
right, well, the Dark Tower series, you know, as Stephen King himself has said, is kind of...
Is Lord of the Rings.
Is homage to the Lord of the Rings.
Right, so we're talking about two series that are pretty much exactly alike, you know? So, yay, Peter Jackson, what are you doing?
Really?
And on top of that, like, that bleeds me into a little side story I wanted to talk about. Under the Dome is being adapted into a TV series now.
That one I could actually see working better as a TV series.
It would, but I'm watching... I've been watching Haven, and that show sucks. And it...
Not familiar with that.
Haven is based off The Colorado Kid, which is a short story that Stephen King did.
Right.
And the series, I mean, it's not horrible, but it's a Stephen King TV series. So if you've ever seen, like, The Langoliers, if you've ever seen The Stand, if you've ever seen anything like that, it's got the same type of production value and horror and special effects that goes with those things, where it's, like, seriously crappy and not really realistic at all, you know? So when you get shows like Eureka or something like that that, you know, is over the top, but the special effects make the stuff look real, then you kind of forgive it. Whereas with Haven, they're not doing that. So how are they going to do that with Under the Dome or anything else they adapt from him? I mean, that was one of the things. The Stand, as great as that show was, would have been a hell of a lot better if they didn't use such crappy special effects. And plus Stephen King's...
And no Molly Ringwald.
No Molly Ringwald. Plus Stephen King's words, his dialogue does not translate well in the real world. Nobody really talks like that, like they do in Stephen King books. So they need to improve it. They need to update it, you know, whatever they need to do. So how, you know, Under the Dome, it's probably not going to work either in that aspect, unless they upgrade it. Because he still talks like we're, like, in the 70s hippies. That's how his dialogues are in all of his books, you know?
I think it's just, like, the sort of main accent, since, you know, most of his books take place there.
Well, I'm not talking about the accent. I'm talking about the actual verbiage that he uses. It's almost like Tarantino, how Tarantino speaks, you know, his dialogue contains that kind of stuff. But at least with Tarantino, they're kind of cool. He makes homages and references that we all get, whereas Stephen King's references are like, okay, I didn't listen to 8-track or the radio in the 70s to get what you're talking about, dude, you know? At least it doesn't translate well on film, I don't think. Or the actors lack the ability to make it sound real or good.
Yeah, but the thing is at least with Under the Dome, I could see them making changes to you know, the character and dialogue stuff and still having it work, because it was, I mean, while it was sort of like a character study book, and, you know, in terms of people dealing with the situation, I think there is a little bit more room in there to make those changes.
True. I mean, you have a good opportunity to make adjustments and stuff, but have you read Under the Dome, right?
Yeah.
Have you read The Luna Brothers Girls?
Right. Yeah. It's kind of a similar situation.
It is. So I don't know. We'll see. But if you're done with your story, I got a little news story I want to toss up real quick.
Yeah.
Pictures of Captain America Chris Evans in uniform have showed up in costume, and we managed to put it on. Mail Online was great in that they, you know, grabbed the pictures and were able to post it online. I, of course, being the hijacker that I am, went and copied those pictures, posted them up on our own website. Chris, I don't know Chris Evans, okay, let me take a breath here. Let me just pull on back.
Just let it out, man.
Let me breathe for a second, collect my thoughts, because it seems like this episode is nothing but bitching about how people are fucking up everything. So I'm going to continue that. But as bad as I thought Chris Evans would be in this role, like I'm fully against Chris Evans being portraying Captain America. Seeing him in costume and stuff is only emphasizing it more. The costume looks ridiculous. It makes me feel like we're watching Flash Gordon all over again. The images I'm seeing feel very Flash Gordon-ish. The helmet looks ridiculous. Everything else feels like it doesn't fit. It just looks like it doesn't fit. And I don't know how I feel about it. And again, I'm giving it the benefit of the doubt, because we know movie magic. Once they put some effects on there, once we see it in a different hue, you know, or what have you, it may look awesome. I mean, I felt the same way when I saw the Thor costumes, that they looked utterly ridiculous in the context that they were in. But having seen the Thor trailer, I'm all about fucking Thor. That thing looked awesome and glorious. So I could be wrong. I will put that out there. I could be wrong, but right now I think it looks stupid. So,
well, I'm looking at the pictures right now, and all I can think as I'm looking at it is just herp de derp.
Yeah. The shield looks great. The shield looks fucking awesome. I can't wait to see it in action.
Yeah, but the rest of it, it's like...
I get that it's 1942. I get that. You know, and I grant that. I granted that leeway. But it looks fucking stupid, in my opinion. Formulate your own opinions out there, guys. Take a look at the pictures and tell us what you think. Post on the forum. Send us an email. Hit up Facebook. We're on Facebook. Just let us know what you think about these images, because we'd like to have an argument or discussion about it. So, but that's all I got for this segment, Brian.
Well, the only other thing that I've got is a mainstay of mine.
Blue Water.
Yep.
My favorite part of the show.
Yours and mine. But yeah. Well, if anybody's been reading this site, they'd probably noticed that I posted up a short article about Blue Water getting sued. This is the only time that I've ever been happy about doing a Blue Water story. Essentially, what they are doing is that they're getting sued, specifically by a lawyer representing Lady Gaga and Justin Bieber. Basically, it turns out that the problem is that they have not been,
they haven't gotten any licensing rights to do the stories that they've been doing.
Right, yeah. They've been doing unauthorized biographies. Like, all these things that they're doing, the Female Force and the Fame series and, the Political Force or whatever it was called. I don't remember what the other ones are called, but yeah, they're essentially just sort of, you know, taking the information they can find out of the news and then publishing it as comics. And so a couple of the celebrities have decided that they're not too happy about that. And, you know, while I understand,
but that they are protected under the whole homage law or whatever, right? The whole parody law.
Well, there's a lot of different things. I mean, it's parody, but there's also there's other kind of like changes that have been made to the copyright laws over the years that protect people from doing like unauthorized biographies and such. So chances are that nothing's actually going to happen to Blue Water. But the interesting thing is that the lawyer that filed the lawsuits on behalf of Lady Gaga and Justin Bieber, Kenneth Feinswag, is also the same one who previously had filed a lawsuit against publisher Revolutionary Comics for the exact same thing. This was back in the 90s for a series that was called The Rock and Roll. And it was basically, you know, the same type of comics, but about bands.
And how'd that come about? What happened there?
Eventually, Revolutionary Comics, you know, ended up keeping the right to publish the comics. Nothing happened with it. And so, interestingly, Blue Water actually just purchased the right to republish the Rock and Roll series. So,
Blue Water, man, you're doing an amazing job of doing absolutely nothing and taking all the credit for it. That's
right,
awesome.
Right. That's basically what it's coming out to. But I did find it kind of interesting that the same lawyer failed at this once before, and now the company that he's suing for it again is purchasing the comics that he tried to sue for previously.
How much do you want to bet that Blue Water actually hired him? That Blue Water called him up and said, hey, present this lawsuit against us so that we can get
some press, yeah.
Get some press. We'll increase in sales and numbers going on there, and we'll kick you a side deal.
I wouldn't be surprised at all, to tell you the truth.
Because that sounds like a Blue Water thing to do.
Yeah. And, you know, just as an aside here, they're also apparently creating an unauthorized biography of Betty White, which should be the most fantastic and interesting comic ever created. Judging by the screen captures that they have here, it's supposed to take place in, like, the 1900s and features Betty White as the Statue of Liberty. So, yeah, some quality work there.
Nice.
Well, I'm going to stop talking about Blue Water before my head explodes, so...
Oh, but that would be awesome. That'd be something else we can sue Blue Water for. Hit explodey.
They would just win.
And then do a comic book about it.
Yeah, probably. Well, I haven't got anything else of you.
Nope.
All right, we'll take a quick break and then come back.
Woohoo!
Hi, I'm a chick. And I read comic books and play video games. And yes, I am attractive. And whenever I need new information, I head over to Forbidden Panel and look for new geeks to seduce and... I'm sorry.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. In this segment, we're going to talk about some of the new stuff that you may have seen up on the website and some of the stuff that we've been reading at the same time. Brian, what's going on?
Well, as far as the trailers go, let's go ahead and talk about the Walking Dead trailer, because I've got a huge boner over this thing.
That's kind of gross, and I don't want to see it.
Well, it's a good thing this is not an audio podcast.
Right.
But no, the Walking Dead trailer has come out, and I have to say that I'm really excited about the show. Every time something new comes out about this thing, I just want to see it more and more and more, and I can't wait. I mean, I know we've got a little over a month.
It comes out on AMC during Halloween Horror Nights, which will be on Halloween itself at 10 p.m. Which, you know what, honestly, I think is the most stupidest thing they could have done with this, because we're all going to be out trick-or-treating and partying at 10 p.m. on Halloween night. So I don't know how many people will be watching it, you know. I know I personally am not going nowhere. I'm going to be sitting in front of the fucking TV watching this. But, I mean, other people,
right.
Like, for other people, Halloween is their big party night. They look forward to this all year long. So I don't know just how much they're going to be staying in. Unless they're banking on all of us pathetic comic book reader losers that live in our mom's basement, not having any friends and not going anywhere, and maybe having a Walking Dead party, which is totally feasible. But, you know, I'm hoping Walking Dead is a gateway, is a doorway to open up to bring more people, more non-comic book readers and more fans into the circle. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, I don't know. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
No, but it just, everything that I've seen of the trailer, like the official trailer they have, and not just their little sneak peek things that they had been releasing before, but... It looks like they're really sticking to the story as far as just everything that's been revealed in the trailer so far in terms of the characters that they have and the way that the story's progressing. It looks like they really are going to be sticking to it as much as possible and, you know, trying to stay as true to the comic as possible. And, I mean, Frank Darabont's already said that he's probably going to be introducing a few elements of his own into it, and he does that with everything that he directs.
And Kirkman has already said that he's approved of it and that it's not going to really... they're not going to be Nazis about sticking to the comic book storyline. They are going to branch out and use the opportunity to tell more different stories.
Right. But it looks, at least in terms of just the overall feel of the way that it's being presented, is going to work for me.
Well, I'm glad it works for you.
All right, well, what have you got?
I totally agree with you. Everything, the trailer that we have up on the site right now is the trailer that was premiered at the San Diego Comic-Con this year. The trailer that we all went crazy for. They showed it to us twice at the beginning and the end of the thing. So I'm super excited about it. I love it. It looks awesome. And, you know, I've been talking to people a lot lately about it. And people who've been out of comic books are getting back into comic books. They're anxious to read it. People who've never read comic books but are zombie fans and fans of the genre are just excited to see it as well. So it's doing a good job of grabbing almost everybody in the genre. So I'm really amped to see it, and I can't wait for it to happen. I am only upset over the fact that it's only 6 episodes long. That's the first season. But if they do it anything like the BBC does a season, then that's a lot of stuff that they're going to put in there. I mean,
right.
One of the things I'll be talking about in the next segment will be Being Human, which is what I'm watching right now. And you feel every minute of that. I mean, that's an hour long without commercials. So you're able to get everything in there. And they're already able to put a lot in there. So I'm hoping that The Walking Dead does the same way. You know, and it's AMC, so you can't go wrong with that. I mean, everything I've seen from AMC, I'm watching Rubicon right now, and I'm loving the show. So who knows? One of the other trailers that we put up there is the new X-Force trailer. Marvel has done a little trailer for their new X-Force relaunch coming out here soon. And it looks pretty cool. I'm pretty down with it. I'm not happy with the voice acting that they chose for Wolverine. It seems really, I don't know, like he's trying too hard, like he's going to hurt his throat by talking like that. But, you know, I'm a big fan of the recent reboot of X-Force in where they were chosen to be the hit squad for X-Men. They were given a full license to kill, and they ran out trying to kill people that are causing damage to mutants out there. The new reboot that they're doing is that, before they were sanctioned by Cyclops. You know, he said go.
Mm-hmm.
Now they don't have Cyclops' sanction, but Wolverine doesn't care because he believes in the cause. So they're going after their first target in Apocalypse because they're tired of what Apocalypse is doing to the mutant race and what he represents and, you know, the genetic manipulations that he does to innocent people. So they're going after him first. So I'm excited to see it. I like the new cast. I really wish X-23 would come back into the fold, but you can't have everything you want, you know. So if you haven't checked it out yet, go on. It's on the website right now for binpanel.com. You know the address. Just go click play and go for it and see. Tell us what you think. Brian?
One of the other trailers that I wanted to talk about is for Portal 2. This is something else that I have a huge boner for. If anybody,
you just seem to have a boner when the cool breeze hits you.
Yeah, I do, really. But Portal, the original game Portal, was such a fantastic game. I mean, it was...
Surprisingly so. It's such a simplistic design and game. But
it
was awesome.
I mean, before this game came out, I never would have thought that a first-person puzzle shooter would have worked at all. The idea sounded ridiculous, but
Mom,
I got to hand it to Valve. They know what they're doing. I mean, I should have figured that the creators of Half-Life would have been able to make it work, and they did.
Well, that's what Portal is. It's a little side shooter of Half-Life.
Right. The trailers that I've seen for Portal 2, both just in terms of just like when they're unveiling the new features that they're going to be adding and the gameplay and everything.
The physics engine
looks amazing. The physics engine, yeah. I mean, the physics engine for the original Portal was already pretty phenomenal, but it looks like they've done so much more with it. And they found this idea that worked, and now all of a sudden, like, they're running with it. And everything that I've seen,
And it's co-op.
It's amazing. Yes, the co-op is especially going to be exciting because it's going to add so many interesting elements into the, you know, the puzzle aspect of the game.
I'm warning anybody right now, if you play co-op with Portal with me, I'm going to fuck with you the entire game. I'm sorry, but the first few hours is about me shooting you through all these goddamn portals and has nothing to do with the gameplay. I'm just going to mess with you all day long. Just letting you know. Just FYI.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you probably won't be the only one. I mean, trolling is kind of a big pastime for people on multiplayer.
Well, I'm not going to TK. I'm just gonna watch you go on an endless portal loop. That's all I'm going to do. It's just randomly launch you somewhere. That's all it is.
Yeah, I'm definitely very excited for this game. So I should start setting some money aside so I can buy it.
Indeed. One of the other things I wanted to talk about real quick is, you know, I've been reading, as I complained about in the last podcast that we did, with the abundance of X-Men titles and stuff that are X-Men, Deadpool, Wolverine, Batman, Super, oh my god, the oversaturation of these titles on the market is killing me. Killing me.
I don't even bother.
But I'm the current storyline that's going on in the X-Men comic books, I don't know how to feel about it. It's Dracula. Anyway, they're bringing back vampires and Dracula and stuff, and it feels like, while I'm grateful for the fact that everybody's finally getting off of the zombie kick so that we can still be a zombie comic book and not feel like, you know, trendy, they've now jumped on the vampire kick. Everywhere you look right now is crazy vampire-ness all over the place, and it's getting crazy, just retarded. And X-Men are now falling victim to it, where a big vampire war is going on. They've got to bring back Dracula to help them out, and blah, 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 blah. Shut the fuck up. It's stupid. It feels like seriously, they're running out of things to write about, people to fight. They have no problem bringing in all these new characters. I don't know how they went from having 198 mutants to, like, all these mutants we've never seen or heard of before. Like, were they in the original 198, or what's going on there? But now they're fighting vampires, and I don't know. I don't like it. I'm reading it because that's my job, but I'm not liking it right now. What I am liking is what's going on in the Daredevil comic books, and that is Shadowland. Daredevil is, I don't know, for those of you that don't know what's going on with Daredevil right now, he's taken over the Hand, which is a ninja, magical ninja cult that Elektra used to run, but now he's in charge of it. And he's using them to instruct law in Hell's Kitchen. And I don't know, I just like it. He's got a new costume design. He's like the man. He's banned any superheroes from being in there in Hell's Kitchen. And he's just running his own little country, that it feels like. And the thing I don't like about it is, once again, you've got like 20 million Shadowland titles that are out now. Because heaven help us if we all just follow it in one comic book. But no, they have to create more comic books for it to follow it, and that's annoying. But it's a decent title. It's going on right now. And if you haven't picked it up, pick it up, check it out, and let us know what you think. So that endeth my rant. Brian?
Well, I don't think that I have anything else right at the moment.
Awesome. You know what? Speaking of vampires, I'm going to take this opportunity. Screw the next segment. I'm going to talk about this show that I've been watching called Being Human. Brian, you said you hadn't seen it before, right?
No, I haven't.
We had been making fun about it behind the scenes, and that, like, it sounds like a bad joke. Being Human is about a ghost, a vampire, and a werewolf.
Who walk into a bar.
It's a show put out by the BBC right now. It's about an hour long, and it's an... I didn't want to watch this show because I was really sick of all the stupid vampire stuff that's going on right now. Vampire Diaries being predominant, The Gates being out there, it's a werewolf show. Just all the Twilight crap that's going on. I didn't want to watch it. But I gave it a chance because, like, honestly, we have this gap right now between seasons. The summer season's over and the fall season hasn't officially began yet, so we have this gap, so I decided to check it out, and it's surprisingly good. It's pretty decent. It's first off, there's no glitter. Second of all, there's no dumbasses running around with crossbows. Like, it's just, it's a realistic show, and that's kind of cool. It's about this vampire and this werewolf who randomly meet up one day and decide to get a place in Bristol, and the place they move into is being haunted by a ghost. Unfortunately, the ghost is being somebody that hasn't passed on yet because they haven't finished business. It's very, I don't know, it's very cool. It's more political than it is anything campy. The special effects are pretty awesome in itself, in that you see the werewolf transformation and everything happening. The vampires can't survive in the sun, though it does bother them. I don't know, I like it for some reason. It just appeals to me. So if you haven't had a chance, man, check it out. It's pretty cool. There is one thing I wanted to mention. Let me give you an example of the writing. Okay, in episode 2 of the series, mm-hmm. It starts off with one of the guys, the werewolf, transforming. And what I'm about to read you is the narrative that's happening while it's transforming. Okay, he should be dead within 30 seconds. The werewolf heart is about 2/3 the size of a human's, but in order to shrink, first it has to stop. In other words, he has a heart attack. All the internal organs are smaller, so while he's having his heart attack, he's having liver and kidney failure too. If he stops screaming, it's not because the pain is dulled. His throat, gullet, and vocal cords are tearing and reforming. He literally can't make a sound. By now, the pituitary gland should be working overtime, flooding his body with endorphins to ease some of the pain. But that too is shut down. Anyone else would have died of shock long ago, but it won't kill him, and that's the thing I find most remarkable. It drags him through the fire and keeps him alive and even conscious to endure every second. Nothing like this could just evolve. This is the fingerprint of God, the impossible lethal curse spread by tooth and claw. Victim begets victim begets victim. It's so cruel, it's perfect. So that narrative is happening while you're watching this person transform into a werewolf. So, I mean, that's, to me, that's awesome. That's an awesome narrative.
Yeah, it's kind of cool that they try to sit there and
right, they got,
I guess, try to like explain how the
romanticize,
the lycanthropy happens.
Yeah, they romanticize it, and it they do a great job. So they just finished showing season 2 of the show, and they're currently filming season 3. So if you have not watched it yet, are unfamiliar with it, then introduce yourself. You'll know within the first, I'd say, I mean, it's a 6 episodes a season. So you're not really, you know, wasting too much time in watching at least one season to get to know if you like it or not. And I can pretty much guarantee that most of you will. So give it a shot. Let me know what you think about it either way. If you're already a fan, then I hop on the bandwagon and let me know what you're thinking. So, Brian, that's all I got.
All right. Well, I think that's everything for this segment. So we'll go ahead and take a break and be right back.
Hi, this is Justin White with Necrosapien Press. Why don't you come down and check out the website at necrosapien.net. You can see all my latest artwork and projects, and we'll have a store up soon where you can buy prints of my art. Thanks.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. I guess we'll go ahead and jump in here into what I've been reading, which is not much, but I did start the new Dungeons & Dragons series that's come up, read issue number 0, and I was not really impressed at all.
Why not?
Well, I've been really kind of, I mean, I'm a huge D&D fan. So I've been really wanting a good fantasy comic, and it just, most of them don't really seem to capture my interest very well. And I was hoping that this one was going to, but so far it's it seems like they're trying too hard to make it based off of the D&D like archetypal characters, and they just seem like they're too you know, one dimensional. They're not really interesting characters at all. The dialogue was really awkward in this. I just did not like the dialogue at all. I mean, there was no real sense of character development. Like, they just seemed like the characters just kind of seemed like they were taken straight out of the player's handbook and then slapped onto the comic page.
Yeah, that's what I never really liked about any of the D&D adaptations. Like, you can't really, like, for the movies or the comic books or anything that they put out for it, or the books, mm-hmm. you can't really do that, considering it's such an open, I mean, you can't really build characters based on that and expect us to relate to them, because the whole point of D&D is building a character that is something you like, or, you know, some sort of amalgamation of yourself, and putting them into these situations. So how can you take that away from us and expect us to enjoy it?
Well, the thing is that it seems like they're trying too hard to make this a D&D storyline, and that's kind of where it falls short, is because all they're doing is just taking stuff out of the game and just kind of putting it in the comic, and like it would have been fine if, you know, if they had come up with a storyline or something. I mean, it could work out. It has before, like with the Dragonlance novels, for instance. I happen to particularly enjoy those, and those books were all based off of the original Dragonlance adventures that they designed and then role-played, and then they took their role-playing sessions and converted them into books.
Yeah, but that's exactly the point, though. They took role-playing sessions and converted them into stories.
Right.
Most of the other times, they don't do that. You know?
Right, and it doesn't seem like that's what's being done here. It doesn't seem like there's any real... I mean, the story is just sort of generic and kind of vague, really. And the characters themselves, like I said, they're just sort of carbon copies of what you would find in the Player's Handbook. They don't have any real personal touch. They don't have anything that makes them characters.
I don't know. How was the art? Was the art at least good?
Yeah, I liked the artwork for it. The artwork was good, but really, I mean, it was the only enjoyable thing about the book, and that's kind of sad. I mean, part of the comic, the point of comics is getting the story along with the pictures. I mean, otherwise, I may as well just look at a book of paintings that people made, because, you know, I mean, if the art can't just sit there and be expected to tell this story on its own,
right?
It's got to be a combination of the two things,
right? Well, that's too bad.
So yeah, I'll say this: I'll go ahead and I'll give the series a few more shots. You know, I'll read the next few issues and see if they developed the characters better or something. Maybe it was just something where, you know, they're starting off and they didn't really have a whole lot. Maybe they're, I don't know.
Well, again, it's a zero issue.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
yeah, so,
it's not going to get too in-depth in it.
Right. I mean, I wasn't expecting them to reveal everything right then and there, but usually a zero issue does a pretty fair job of introducing the characters and setting up what's going on, and I didn't get any of that in this. Like, I really have no idea what the story is. I don't really know anything about the characters at all. I don't even know why they're adventuring together. I don't know what their past is. I don't know what their motivation is. I don't know anything. They're not characters. They're just sort of there.
That sucks.
So, that's what I've got.
Well, alrighty then. Now, you read Scarlet, right?
Yes. Yeah, I think we talked about that in our last episode.
I finally got a chance to sit down and read it, and I like it. I think it's pretty awesome. Good job recommending it.
Yeah, Scarlet. I mean, that was one where it's like, in the first issue, I knew what the character was. I knew what the basic plot of the story was going to be. I knew where it was going.
But again, it's the first issue. It's a whole number one as opposed to a zero. A zero is supposed to cover is like, here's the world you're about to get into. You know?
Yeah, but I didn't even really get that.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Out of the other one. But yeah, Scarlet definitely is good, and I'm excited to see where that's going to go.
Yeah, number two came out recently, and I read it, and I loved it. I think they're doing a great job where it's going, leading it down the road that they're leading it down. So I'm very excited about it. So... but one of the things I wanted to talk about was season 3 of Sons of Anarchy started up this week. And, Brian, I know you're watching the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't started the new season yet, but...
What do you think of the show? Do you like it?
Yeah, I do like it. I find it pretty entertaining. I mean, I don't know how realistic it is as compared to actual motorcycle gangs, but it's an entertaining show, and I think Katie Sagal is probably definitely one of the better characters on there.
Right. No, I agree with you on that. Season 3 started off, and I'm not going to give away too much, but I will say this. The first, say, 35 minutes of the show, it's kind of dull. It's kind of just basically, you know, updating you what's happened since the end of season
right.
2, and kind of slow and drama-y and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, it's not really too exciting. So I'm watching this, and I'm like, okay, I hope the season doesn't go like this the whole time. It's good, and I'll still watch it, but, you know, I won't be too excited about it. And then the end happens. The last 5 minutes just fucking
they hooked
rocked.
You in.
Oh, my God. And it's in true Sons of Anarchy style, because it does that a lot. It'll get you through, like, the episode where, like, you're interested in what's happening. You're getting the points of the story. You're good to go. And then the end comes in, and they throw up a musical montage of some badass shit happening. You know?
Right.
It's very Sons of Anarchy. So it was my bad that I did not remember that while watching this first episode. You know, because I'm watching it, and I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, that's cool. Oh, I expected a little more. But, oh, shit, what the fuck happened now? Like, oh, my God. If you haven't picked up on it yet, then you need to watch it right away. Especially you, Brian, dude. I know... if you're a fan of the show, you'll like it. And stick to the end. Just give it to the end of the episode. Because that's when it just kicks in and you're like, yeah! Like, I'm so amped about the series now. The only problem is that I now see where the entire rest of the season is going to go. Like, and I'm a little upset about that.
They kind of overplayed their hand a little?
Yeah, like, well, I wouldn't say that. I'd say... I'm not angry at the fact that I see where the season's going to go. I'm angry at the direction that they're going to take.
Mm.
You know, like, where they're going to put one major story, one major issue as a backstory and focus on another issue that happens at the end of the episode. And so that kind of bothers me, and that they should be sticking with the main episode, the main story throughout the first episode, you know?
Right.
But the way that they deliver it, you kind of understand why. Like, I wish I could talk about it, but I can't because I understand you haven't seen it. A lot of other people haven't seen it, but just, yeah, it will not disappoint you. Check it out. It's phenomenal. Another show that I watched last night, actually, before I watched a crappy movie, was Terriers. This is a new show.
I don't know what that is.
It's a new show that I randomly found, I wasn't really looking for it. I just saw it pop up on my download list, so I downloaded it and check it out. It's with Donald Hughes. I can never remember how to pronounce his name. He was in Blade, the first one.
Okay.
He was the guy that got his hand cut off, kept getting his hand cut off.
Right. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's been on a lot
of
stuff.
Donald Logue or something like that.
Yeah.
He's Scottish.
Yeah. Something like that. But he's been on a lot of other TV shows. And in this one, he's a private detective. He's a private eye. But he's a slummy-looking private eye. Like, this guy's like... You know, he dresses like I do, and so he looks scummy, and just you just don't get it. And his partner, I'm sorry guys, but I fail on this partner's name. He was in the first season of True Blood, and he was the psycho serial killer that was trying to pretend like he was Cajun, but ended up dying at the end of the season. He's his partner in there, and they're just private detectives cruising around trying to figure out what's going on and doing their thing. But the style and the format that they do it in is very. I don't know. I like it a lot. There's no anxiousness in it. There's no rush in it. And it's very laid back and cool, but very realistic. Like, this shit can happen. Like, you can totally see this stuff happening. And I like it. I dig it. Like I said, the first episode was last night, so you still have a chance to check it out. I don't remember what show it's on. I think it's on FX or TNT. I don't know. Not TNT. It's got to be on FX. But it's pretty cool, so check it out. And again, that leads me into what I saw last night. And that being Resident Evil Afterlife, I believe it's the new one's called.
Who knows? Who cares?
You know, let me just say this first. I knew what I was getting into when I walked into that theater, okay? And I was not disappointed because I knew what I was getting into. It was the first one that they'd done in 3D, and I knew it wasn't going to be the 3D that we all like. It's the 3D that just basically enhances the image of the movie, right? The kind of 3D that makes it better than 1080p, you know, that improves the quality of the film. So, I knew what I was getting into. I knew it was going to be cheap, campy, posing action shots and blah, blah, blah. And I was not disappointed in that aspect. The storyline was kind of weak. The acting was what you would expect it to be. But the visuals were insane and over the top, and they were kind of cool. What bothers me is that first off, they rip off The Walking Dead by having a majority of the film take place in a prison that they're holed up in, which is straight out of the pages of The Walking Dead.
Right.
The second thing is they rip off ZKS, and that makes me very fucking angry. And that they're all trying to get to a ship for safety. It's a big cargo vessel that they're all trying to get to for safety, exactly what ZKS is doing, except we're an aircraft carrier in their ship, but it's still basically the same idea. That people dressed up uniforms that are very similar to ZKS with umbrella attachments instead, which again bothers me. And then there's this whole thing, this whole problem that I always have with these kind of movies. Umbrella Corporation is supposed to be this badass corporation that with highly trained military operatives, correct? Am I right on that? Okay. So being an ex-former military person myself, I look for certain things when I watch movies. I look for actions and things that I've been trained on that I know to avoid. These people are supposed to be better trained than I am.
And they're doing all of them?
And they're making all the fucking trainee mistakes. They're making day one mistakes. Like, it's just retarded. And they're I don't know how to describe it other than the Thor trailer nails it. And that in the Thor trailer, you know, you see the agent sitting there going, okay, these are some of the best highly trained operatives in the world. And you came in and you made them look like preschoolers, you know? And
right.
That's what happens in the first 10 minutes of the movie, is that they make these stupid mistakes that only idiots would make. So I don't know. But I'm looking at it realistically, and we're talking about a non-realistic world.
Mm-hmm.
So having said that, the soundtrack is amazing. The action is great. Wide open for a sequel. Completely wide open for a sequel. But they seem to ignore a majority of the past cast members that were supposed to bleed over. If you remember in the last end of the last movie, you've got Carlos Oliveri. You've got the guy played by Mike Epps, Allie Larder, and Kmart, and a couple other people that survived. And only Kmart and Allie Larder show up. So I'm curious about where the rest of the characters went. They don't really touch base on that. Chris Redfield is finally introduced, and of course is being played by Wentworth Miller, who you remember from Prison Break. And of course he spends the majority of the movie locked in a cell. So obviously his career didn't go far.
Well, I mean, I've come to expect that with the Resident Evil movies, they're not even really going to bother trying to make anything like the actual Resident Evil storyline. They're just doing whatever they feel like.
Which, I mean, if you think about it, Resident Evil storyline is not that bad. It's pretty good. It gets pretty deep.
Yeah, it was really interesting. And, I mean, that was one of the reasons why I liked the game.
Right. I mean, they bring some of the characters from the latest Resident Evil in with the Executioner, the guy with the big axe. He's in there. The type of zombies that come in, they have like the split mouths that come in.
Mm-hmm.
Those are there. So it's very interesting to see. But I'm not hearing 4 years after the zombie apocalypse, there's still hundreds of zombies knocking at the door. You know, at some point in time, they die out. That's the truth of the matter. If you don't feed something, it dies. So,
especially since in the Resident Evil storyline, they're just infected people.
Right.
They're not like magical zombies like it, you know, they have been in some cases. These ones are infected people.
Right. So yeah.
Must be the Sons of Anarchy out there right now.
I know. They heard us talking shit. So, I'm not angry at the movie. Like, I kind of dug it. And it was worth it for a midnight show, just because you go to a midnight show for the crowd and to have fun. Plus the movie. You know, so it was fun going down there to see it and stuff. But if you're going to see the movie, go see the first showing of your theater, so you get a discounted rate, and go see it in IMAX because it's worth it in IMAX. But don't go seeing it expecting anything great. And I'm fully expecting the sequel to come out, and we'll go from there. So that's my review of that. Okay, so having said all that, why don't we talk about what's been going on for Bin Panel?
Yeah, quite a lot, actually.
Yeah. Brian, why don't you start us off?
Well, as of course, as everybody knows, we've had the what I would consider to be wildly successful pinup contest, the pinup art contest. We got a better turnout for that than I ever really expected. Like, I didn't really know what to expect at all
right. When
it came down to it. And then we just kept getting submissions and getting submissions. And then even once we opened it up for the voting, we got a better response than I really could anticipate.
Yeah, the submission contest, the pinup contest was phenomenal. The artwork was amazing. I mean, you guys that submitted the art for that were, I mean, my hat's off to you. That stuff was great, gorgeous work that you guys did, and I'm very impressed with it and very grateful to it as well.
Yeah, I liked every single piece that came through.
So, congratulations to the winner in Wes Hoffer. You had an amazing piece, and it deservedly won, so congratulations for that. Your prize is a hug from Brian the next time you see it. That's what you won, is a hug from Brian.
Yeah, and I don't like hugging.
No, but he'll hug you. It'll be great. Your prize will be the complete ZKS package, every comic book and poster that we put out so far. You won the cover of the pinup book, as well as the cover of a future ZKS comic book. You will be invited out to one of the conventions with us so that you can sign, do signings, as well as sell your individual artwork, as well as a $50 gift card to Hot Topic. Woo! So congratulations.
Yeah, thanks a lot to Hot Topic for providing that for us.
Yeah, Hot Topic, thanks for being a sponsor in that. We really appreciate it. And thanks to Wes, man. You did a great job. You deservedly won. That's not saying that nobody else deserved to win. All the submissions were amazing. And I was personally pulling for a couple that I can't mention, you know.
we all had our favorites.
We all had our favorites, and we were all hoping for certain ones. But hey, the best one won, obviously, with an amazing amount of votes, over 400 votes. I mean, that's just astounding. So... And thank you for everybody that voted. I really appreciate you guys taking the time to click a like button. You know, it was really the artists appreciate it, as well as the publicity. I mean, it got a lot of names out there. So expect the pinup book to come out sometime in the middle of October. Hopefully we'll have it for APE, at which point you'll be able to purchase for $3 the entire collection of pinups that we had. We'll also be making posters and T-shirts and designs and everything from all the pinups and submissions. So it's very exciting for us. Just in time for the next contest, which you've all known about in the Join the ZKS Army contest that we have coming out.
Right.
We haven't solidified the date on when the contest will happen. Once we do, the date and location, I'll be posting it on Facebook as well as for Bin Panel and ZombieKillSquad.net so that everybody can get on board and be prepared for that, because it's going to be just phenomenal. I think this is going to be the best contest we hold ever, and I'm excited to see it. So, on the... rest of the front, the news that we have for the company itself, for Bin Panel is going strong with well over almost 200,000 hits a month on the website. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in and checking out the website. The next issue of ZKS, not only will it be the pinup book, but it will be the 24-hour comic book, which Justin just finished digitally re-inking, and Brian did an amazing job with the letters. Thank you, Brian.
Oh, no problem. It was my pleasure to do it.
That will be coming out in time for APE as well. Speaking of APE, we have a booth at APE. We expect all of you people in the San Francisco area, as well other areas, to be attending APE and come see us and say hi. Anybody that comes up and tells us they listen to the panel cast, we'll get a free sticker. We'll have the 24-hour comic book. We'll have the pinup comic book and the Zero issue, as well as other great posters and stickers and magnets and the whole nine. And beanies. We will have beanies.
Yeah, my mom actually just purchased one of the Forbidden Panel t-shirts. So
see? Even moms wear Forbidden Panel t-shirts. Speaking of which, head over to the Zazzle store and pick up something. I know the price is fucking outrageous, and I apologize for that. But until we can get enough financing in to produce our own t-shirts and stuff, we have to go through Zazzle. So we appreciate any type of input and purchases that you make. anybody seen wearing a ZKS t-shirt, man, will get just mad love from any of us. Like, that's just, I don't know. I don't know how to describe it for us. It's just awesome to see that happen.
Yeah. It really, any way that you can support us, even if you don't buy anything and just word of mouth.
Right.
You know.
But if you do and you can, we have a donation button sitting up on the website. We do need help in order to produce and print all these comic books. It's not free. It does cost some money, and we are putting this all out independently. So if you can help us out, that'd be great. Speaking of which, we picked up a new title in The Black Pajamas, done by Prometheus Williams and Scott Riddle. That book it's a great book, and Justin and I are in the process of re-editing it and re-putting it out and publishing it out soon here. Hopefully in time for 8, but if not, then definitely in time for one of the other mini conventions that we attend, and we hope you guys like it. It's a cool little book. What else have we got, Brian?
I'm trying to think if there's anything else going. I've already mentioned the new Geek Girls coming out, and details are still, you know, TBA at the moment, but I do have 3 people that are committed to the project, so.
Good deal, good deal. AJ Side Panel has put out a new episode. That's me. So check it out. Let us know what you think. Want to welcome and introduce the newest artist to the Forbidden Panel team, in Julian Aguilera. Julian is a highly talented artist and will be working on a new project with me that I'll be writing and creating. You can see his artwork. He submitted 2 pieces of artwork for the pinup contest, which were just gorgeous pieces.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to his blog. Just Google Julian Aguilera and you'll be able to find him. He's a really cool guy. He did 24-hour comic book with us last year. He and his brother did a book while we were all working on our own books. I have his artwork hanging on my wall in my office. That's how great he is, and we're very lucky to have him join the team and join the new project that we will be working on. Thanks, Julian. You rock.
Yeah, glad to have you aboard.
24-hour comic book day is coming up in October. We will be at 4-Color Fantasies doing our own little book there. Brian, will you be participating in any local comic book stores in your area?
That really remains to be seen at the moment. For some reason, the comic book selection in the area that I live in, it's not fantastic. So most of them don't really seem to have a whole lot going on. I've still got a couple places I'm going to try. What I may end up trying to do is see if I can maybe head up to Boston and do something up there. Cause it's just, you know, it's a more metropolitan area. So it's got a lot more people and they just have better setup for, I think, catering to the comic book crowd.
Right. Right. Well, that'd be awesome if you can get it done. We will have at least 3 different artists with us out here. In Cameron Dorch, his brother Sean Dorch, as well as Justin. So you will be able to see 3 books coming out from us. I will be a busy mofo because I will be writing and inking and penciling all 3 books. So that should be cool. Still debating on whether or not they're going to be ZKS related or something else related. I don't know, but that will be awesome. I promise you, because I'm just that full of myself.
That's okay. We still love you anyway.
Yeah, somebody has to. Brian, do you have anything else you wanted to add before we end the show?
I think we've covered everything pretty well.
Yep. Pretty long show. Sorry for the rambling and the long-windedness. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in, and thank you for your patience. Thank you for your patronage as well. We're very appreciative. We can't say thank you enough. As much of assholes as we normally are in real life and on the show, the end of the show is all of us kissing your ass. Like, seriously, we can't – you have no idea what it means to us that we have fans and people joining us.
Right. Without our fans, we don't have anything.
Right. I mean, we're just babbling to ourselves and playing with ourselves, which we do anyway. But now that we have fans, we just do it with gusto. You know. So, well, all right. Keep checking into ForbiddenPanel.com. Check out the new website, ZombieKillSquad.net. We have other sites that we want you to check out. Look at the banners at the bottom of the Forbidden Panel page. We'll have a new one coming up here in the next couple of days. Brian, what was the name of the website?
Oh, it's going to be called MyCreepyCritters.com.
Awesome, and that's the...
Yeah, it's one of the friend of mine, is actually one of the girls that I did a Geek Girls episode with, was Melly. And she's got a website where she is handcrafting like stuffed dolls, but they're more for, I guess they could be for kids, but they're more geared for adults. You know, they're like things like the disgruntled employee monkey and, you know, stuff like that. They've got like a punk rock panda. So it's kind of for adults that still have a little bit of a childish side to them, but they're like more edgy.
She needs to make a ZKS kind of doll.
Yeah, well, she does have one that's a zombie right now, and yeah, we'll have to talk to her about doing some sort of ZKS characters or something.
Be awesome. So yeah, check out our store, Zazzle.com/ForbiddenPanel. Check out the actual comic book store, ForbiddenPanel.com/stores, plural. Check out Justin's website for more updates on his artwork, Necrosapien.net. Yeah, I can't say anything more. Thanks again, everybody. For Brian, this is AJ. This is episode 63 of the Panelcast. Stay tuned next week for episode 64. And see you then.
Panelcast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.